I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. We all know that TV is changing quickly. This week proved that with lots of announcements from HBO Max and the launch of Apple TV Plus on Friday. But that doesn't mean that everything you've done to brand and market your show, your channel, your network, and now your streaming service has to be discarded. Instead, says Red Bee Creative's Charlie Maurer, take the best of all of it and turn it into an entirely new approach for the complex world of TV in 2020 and beyond. Listen in to this session taken from our June conference in Los Angeles to hear what Maurer has to say.
Thank you. Yes, hi everybody. My name's Charlie Maurer. I'm here from London. You sent us Donald for a few days, and we've sent, well, me. So we'll see after 45 minutes how that's played out as a trade. Now, 4 years ago, back in the dim and distant past, when Barack was in the White House and Joffrey was on the Iron Throne, happier times, I gave a deliberately provocative talk here to ask why, given my 25 years in the industry, an industry that had gone through profound revolution, why had the make lists for TV channels for rebranding not changed an iota? And I posited a series of new things for marketeers and designers to think about, from signature movements to content throws to new forms of templates. I mean, I have to say, 4 years on, in our experience, not a lot has changed. But from a brand building and design point of view, I think there's an even bigger challenge that's arisen as our industry has embraced new technology and new delivery mechanisms, but we haven't necessarily taken with us the 70 years of learning that we've built up about what makes great TV brands. Earlier this year, in a very punchy start to a new job, Bob Greenblatt, the new head of Warner, HBO, said, "Netflix doesn't have a brand, it's just a place you go to get anything." I mean, as mic drops go, it's quite a big thump, I'll give him that. But it's also clearly a pretty unfair one. Netflix is one of the strongest singular brands in the world in any category, and a watchword for creative excellence and editorial excellence. But as we know, they've had a pretty clear field for 8 years or so, and in a clear field, the one thing you don't necessarily need to do is differentiate. So where are the brands in streaming TV design? You know, compared with the strength and clarity of network and cable brands, so far there haven't been as many established. It seems we're slightly leaving our skills in brand creation behind when it comes to online video players, and I don't understand why that is. Now, we know that the main battleground in the war for audiences between all of these services that are spreading like wildfire, despite all of the all-time, anytime campaigns that we're all making, the battleground is going to be smart TVs. By far the biggest source of growth in online TV viewing is on the main TV set, where you can call up a home screen of apps to choose from. But realistically, how many of those apps are consumers going to get? How many are they going to pay for, even if they're only costing you $5.99 a month? The average number of SVOD services that people subscribe to in pretty established markets is between 2 and 3 at the moment. The entirely unscientific accreditation that I'm going to look at the mid-future, and this is what I've called Charlie's hunch, is between 4 and 7. If you get inside that top table as a brand, you're golden. If you're outside it, you're probably going to be dead. So who will the winners be? Well, they'll either be the ones with the biggest budgets to invest in the best content, or they'll be the best brands. The brands you most relate to, the ones who offer the best overall experience, and a way of talking and behaving that feels like it's meant for you. So for the next 45 minutes, I want to look at both the things that OTT platforms and streamers can learn from linear. And then, because I know for many of us the battleground is still in that extraordinarily resilient world where 19 million people watch an episode of Game of Thrones live, some things that linear design and promo people can learn from emerging technologies. So, first of all, how we as linear can help our streaming friends, and then what we can learn from them. But let's start with one area that I think OTT could definitely be improved on. the look and feel of the products themselves. Now, here is a Netflix home screen in 2012, and this is it now. Here is one of the most influential national services, BBC iPlayer, back in 2011. And here's a screen grab I took last week. Not much design evolution in 8 years, really, in an industry that is in such rapid transition. Now, if I take those old versions away and then, I don't know, add in Amazon Prime Video and HBO Now, and then add in the home screens for some other online TV services from major media organizations around the world. There are 42 examples on this screen from 21 individual countries, as well as some very big global names. Maybe you can spot your own player here, though it is a little bit like Where's Wally? I think it's a bit of a damning indictment on our design industry, personally. And then the other day I came across an amazing brand that I hadn't heard of before called Canopy. Canopy, which is an extraordinary library of movies, free. Free to anyone with a library pass, that is, around the world. And they've got a brilliant, fascinating proposition, thoughtful entertainment. And I thought, well, this, you know, a service with such a clear differentiator in the market, such an insightful positioning, that's going to look radically different, isn't it? Clunk. So why are we here? Well, we're here, I guess, because Netflix has always set the standard. But why do so many other video services all look so similar? Well, it says to me that we have begun to think that all that matters in streaming is the individual series and movies. And I think that's really dangerous for a lot of people in our industry as streaming gets more and more competitive. Now, I'm not naive. I know why we are where we are. And it's because traditional brand creators and marketeers haven't necessarily had a voice at the design table, because technologists have ruled that domain. And understandably, to an extent, with their mantra of data and algorithms and loading times and eye tracking and A/B testing. But all of these criteria apply to every single service identically, which is why every service looks the same. It's like if every car was designed to optimize airflow, fuel efficiency, load maximization, they would all look exactly the same. Here's five different car manufacturers proving that in wind tunnel test labs. But instead, you know, this is what cars look like, gloriously diverse, because since the any color as long as it's black days, they've known how to build brands, to pay attention to small details, to think about form as well as function. They need to differentiate. It was famously once said that strategy is not just optimization. Yes, successful products must be continually optimized, but that can't be our whole plan. It feels to me like it has kind of been the whole plan in online streaming design. It is possible, trust me, that video carousels and navigation can look substantially different. Of course it is. Look, Greenpeace have done it here, and they're not a TV brand. Or this rather beautiful portfolio site, which has got lovely drag transitions using a radial UI design pattern. Doesn't look like anything that we looked at earlier. This site uses beautiful liquid-like transition effects to give it an incredibly distinctive look, feel, and personality. Or even as simply as using full screen video, as this production company does to transition between their director's reels. It feels incredibly fresh in a market with very little distinction. So it kind of seems to me there's a bit of a paradox at the heart of UX and UI design for our new TV services between the traditional role of a brand, which is to help viewers to discover stuff, to explore, to give them surprise and delight, and the need also for a service to provide viewer some protection from the paralysis of choice and irrelevant distractions. You know, what we want is what I've called a filter to winnow with, to actually get rid of the stuff to help me make decisions. Brands all over the world are wrestling with this. How do we help people with the paralysis of choice? I find that quite attractive as a thought, everything in one place. To my mind, the answer lies in actually the language that Netflix and Apple are using themselves, humanity versus algorithms. If you look at how, in this case, Netflix has described one of their own podcast initiatives, you know, they talk about Netflix stars, employees, and friends of the pod recommending what they're watching and why you should add it to the list. To me, it suggests that they kind of know there's a bit of an inherent flaw within algorithms. If you look at how Apple talk about their radical new news service, it's humans over machines. You know, humans, those people who've worked in linear TV for 70 years. At Red Bee, we've talked quite a lot about this, a more human approach. In the language of our strategy, it's about curation. It's about curator sub-brands. I think there is a role for sub-brands in streaming services that are more curated, A, and B, actual brands. So at the moment, let's take Netflix. As we've already established, this could be from those 42 services I've shown you, pretty much anybody. But Netflix should know me well, as I spend an awful lot of my life there. Now, we know, because they talk about it, that Netflix have 1,300 taste communities around the world. And myself, as one of the 93 million users, is put into one of those. Now, this is what they served up for me as a couple of sub-brand navigations this week. Raunchy European TV programs and witty workplace TV programs. Now, I'm not going to sit here and quibble with the quality of algorithms, but I have never thought what I'm in the mood for, honestly, is a raunchy European TV program. Or indeed a witty workplace program. It's slightly bizarre language. But actually what I'm more surprised about than that is that if I look at the environment in which I'm being served up comedy, and it is exactly the same as the environment in which I'm being served up action and adventure, that seems counterintuitive to everything that I've learned in TV. So instead, let's imagine my perfect experience. I'm going to build a category around my favorite comedy writer and producer, Amando Iannucci. I've started here by putting in all of the shows that he's written or been showrunner on, from Veep to Alan Partridge. And then I've added in shows from graduates of his writing teams, which adds in Succession, Hustle, The IT Crowd. And it suddenly starts to feel kind of something exciting that I'd really want to know if new stuff landed there. So maybe I'll have a bit more of a signpost, so I'm going to change the name and call it Amando, just so that I really clock it when it appears. And because it's Amando, and I might want to advertise this category, maybe I'll give it a slightly more distinctive look and feel. I mean, I'm going to be radical. I'm just going to make it white in an all-black screen so that I can scroll and get to it really quickly. It's a little bit dull at the moment, isn't it? And I want to be a bit more memorable, so I'm going to give it a logo, a little mark. In this case, Amando meet Armadillo. But because it's Amando, it also needs a suitably irreverent tone of voice, because I'm not going to promote this or curate it with exactly the same color scheme, look and feel, and language as a selection of Chuck Norris action films. So we're going to lean into Armando a bit and the fact that he's a master of the written word with something that looks like this, maybe. And, you know, here's an inducement to watch Veep, one of my favorite quotes from Selena. Jonah, you like to have sex and you like to travel. Yes, ma'am. Then you can fuck off. The Amando collection, new to Netflix. Is that too far? I mean, to me, it feels like a great tone of voice. And interestingly, a tone that Netflix strike really successfully in social media. Look at this tweet that I saw earlier this year. If you liked Fire and the Ted Bundy tapes, may we suggest Abducted in Plain Sight, a doc you can also file under What in the Actual. But, you know, suddenly, if you look at what we've created, this category has become, what do we call it? Oh, yes, a brand, a sub-brand, perhaps. But it's a sub-brand that could become a lucrative vertical with comedy festivals, with brand partnerships, with writing academies. Because if we were in the UK, then that channel might be called something catchy with a distinctive tone of voice that really helps me into trying new shows or discovering new content. Back in the dinosaur days of linear TV channels, we named it Dave. and it was the most successful TV brand launch of all time. And it's led to comedy festivals, brand partnerships, range extensions. So maybe there is a role for sub-brands in the future. It's worth noting that Disney launching their new service are already leaning on curator sub-brands, in this case very well-known ones like Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, National Geographic. I don't know the full range, but if I was them, given the work we've saluted at this conference over the last 10 years, I would have FX in there too, in a heartbeat, as a really strong curator sub-brand. In sport, a brand like DAZN have got curator sub-brands. It's just that we also recognize them as sports rights holders. But they all serve as navigational aids. Going back to that DRTV spot, they all help me with that paralysis of choice. Navigational aids beneath a master brand that could stimulate new viewing. So talking of master brands, a word on naming, and also a bit on the semantic visuals of logos. This is a project led by our brilliant head of design, Jane Fielder, who did a lot of analysis of what we've started to understand by logo design and naming within this world. When we use words like play and plus and now and TV, and within that, the visual shift from what broadcaster brands that we expect to deliver because of the visual characterizations of the logos they used to have, and what the new and evolving logos are adopting and what they say about becoming a media brand. It's a shift that we can see happening worldwide, and it has a really profound effect on how consumers look at what we do. Looking at naming, our belief in the lasting power of TV as a descriptor is something that's crept up and surprised people. As a generic way of talking about consuming content on any device in a non-theatrical setting. It led to our work with Lee, who's in the audience here, rebranding NBC Universal's global brand Universal Channel, which was a singular legacy linear destination, into Universal TV. And anywhere, anytime, any portal brand. Now, I know there are valid, structural, sound business reasons behind some of the naming practices that we've adopted, but when I stumble on articles that say this, HBO Go versus HBO Now, which streaming service is right for you? And the first sentence said, let's compare HBO Go against HBO Now. The good news is they have a lot more in common than you might think. And I was like, good news for who? Because superficially, that is mentally confusing. You know, if you take a parallel industry view, and at Redby, we also work a bit in the fashion industry, believe it or not. If I buy a T-shirt from The Gap, and I've bought it from an app, or from a website, or from a bricks and mortar store, I'd just say, well, I bought it from The Gap. I don't say I bought it from Gap Now, or Gap Plus, or Gap Go. I think we should at least, at the very least, have that singular end destination in our minds as TV marketeers. Of course, while we're talking about naming, and indeed show titles going forward, we can't ignore voice activation. This is less the future of EPG navigation, and more the now of it. Here's what TV manufacturers think our home life is like now.
Can you show me today's football scores? Can you show me videos of England goals?
It's a long ball in, and he's found space for a header!
He changed to sports mode.
This will be 3-3 for him if he scores, which he does!
Listen, think, answer. LG OLED TV, now with AI technology.
So it's a real head-scratcher to start thinking about how your brand is going to work in a voice-activated home. Calling a TV series You, for example, is that a good call in the future? Play You. Well, do you mean You or You TV? Or are you actually just trying to get out You, Me, and the Apocalypse or Yukon Men? Or, you know, obviously, my experience of voice activation in my car at the moment suggested that this is probably still the closest that we are to voice activation.
What's the buttons?
Oh no, they installed voice recognition technology in this lift they're holding at us.
Voice recognition technology? In a lift?
In Scotland? You ever tried voice recognition technology?
No.
They don't do Scottish accents.
11.
Could you please repeat that?
11.
11.
You need to try an American accent.
11. 11.
That sounds Irish, not American.
Not, doesn't it?
Where in America is that? Dublin?
I'm sorry. Could you please repeat that?
Try an English accent, right?
11. 11.
Anyway, you get the drift. It's an ad for Stranger Things, is what I'm saying. I do think it's something that we as marketeers need to start getting upstream and advising content creators on, though. But when you've got your show, the fourth recommendation I want to talk about is what we call brand bonds. It slightly long surprised me when I've come to the States, is that how few channels make a serious effort to strongly identify where their vast program investments are actually showing. So I assume that new financially savvy entrants like Amazon would break the mold. But when I look at one of the bits of key art for their big new show, Hannah, and see how easy it is for me to remove anything from their poster that resembles which channel it's on, I'm surprised. And when I put it alongside a bunch of similar bits of key art for shows across a random selection of channels, it proves the point. Now, I know you're all in the industry, so you'll all know which channel they're on. But if I jog backwards and forwards, it is, I think, extraordinary how minimal we make the branding on things that we are spending millions and millions and millions of pounds producing. And let's flow that brand presence forward into another sphere, retail. In this case, a random day on the iTunes store. Now, some commissioning brands use the limited space they've got there to really nail that, yes, this is our show, so you'll see on the key art our logo, and also they'll provide additional tune-in information for the fact that the show is still running on their networks. Some just keep the commissioning brand only, really strong presence for Hallmark there, for example. Some cases, there are brand wars where commissioning channels and production companies are fighting it out for the credit. But for a huge, huge number of shows, there is nothing. No parent wants to claim ownership for them as they leave their own service. And at RedBee, we fundamentally believe that brands deserve better attribution of their valuable assets. So we always look for what we call brand bonds, you know, places that we can intrinsically bond the content to our brand. So for example, 13th Street, the European crime channel, we created a typeface that meant every show title literally locks into a nick with the logo 13th Street. For Universal TV that I mentioned earlier, which is kind of a global equivalent of USA Network, the logo sits on top of show titles, casting a shadow over it. For BBC Three, a digital-only brand, the mark was created for use as a window onto content as much as a brand to burn into social reposts. And then here in the US, working with Telemundo, we helped turn a logo that was, when we started working on it, adaptive or chameleon, and completely could take on the properties of the show that it was attached to. And we said, no, you as Telemundo are the top dog brand. A very brave client in the form of Karen Barroetta agreed and made the call that from now on, we're going to get the audience's attention for the hundreds of millions that we spend on program production. And we're going to own it boldly with our logo in the same place every time, locked into the show title, in the master brand colors, so that the very layout becomes a form of brand bond. And moreover, we're going to take exactly the same approach to font, color scheme, so that every bit of micro attribution goes back to the people who paid the bills to make it in the first place. Here's a little snippet of how that works.
At the thoughts of the boys in the trance when they see me shit the ting like that. Oh, slap on the track. Why is it? Turn it up, pull it back. Dance, shake, move it. They wanna know, yeah, who that guy? She be. Tight, 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 gonna dance, gonna shake.
Now, the fifth thing that I think streaming brands can learn from linear, and it's a really big one, is micro interactions. Number 5 in your manual if you're following along at home. In a linear channel through years of Lee Hunt's brilliant best practice workshops, we've learned how to sweat every second of a break. You know, every violator, every bug, every voiceover is an opportunity to inject brand. But if we return to this online video world, we need to be much more imaginative about the places that we find to inject our brands. And micro interactions are branded moments that set digital products apart from one another. And as we saw earlier, this is really, really needed. They differentiate not through a logo or through a brand style guide, but through functionality and experience. A micro interaction can transform a user's brand encounter from functional to delightful, from serviceable to memorable. Not everyone will notice them, not everyone will notice the craft you've put into it, but those who do will sing the brand's praises and become evangelists. So here's a few examples of these micro things that you could look at. The loading bar, for example. I mean, doesn't that say everything about Apple as a brand, as a beautiful piece of design? But everyone else has kind of copied it. And who says they need to be minimal and refined when they could be big and playful, or they could be full of movement and color? They're still just a loading bar. How you move your mouse could be a micro interaction. Stranger Things on Spotify turned the mouse into a torchlight, searching the upside down. Just a delightful micro interaction that helped me feel really good about them. MailChimp, a brilliant brand. They turn every single function from a simple click to a high five as a thank you into a delight. And notice on this that if you get 3 high fives in a day, the chimp's hand gets progressively more pink from the exertion. Lovely micro attention to detail. Every bit of language should say brand when your screen space is so limited. And again, MailChimp take it into, look at this incorrect username message. Another user with this username already exists. Maybe it's your evil twin. Spooky. How good do you feel about MailChimp when you run into it? Woot as a retailer are also brilliant. Some of my favorites are when I read that they described bestsellers as the deals that you, the public, are telling us you hate the least. Or this one, same great deals, just bigger images. Again, I intrinsically feel warm to them as a brand, and I don't think we're taking this into our streaming services enough. Every bit of language to say brand when your space is limited. Even error messages can be a micro interaction. Check out Pixar. Don't cry. Or even within Netflix, the balls out confidence of saying, we're going to remind you 3 days before that you can cancel for free. If you think about that compared to all of your cable cell or utility providers, it's an incredibly brave piece of brand communication, and they put it on the front page. But, I don't know, setting age profiles, that could be a micro brand interaction, and you could do it in a way that feels sort of surprising and delightful. I think very soon we're all going to be looking at retail reward schemes, rewarding people for binging, for watching a lot of a particular show with maybe exclusive access to content, behind-the-scenes documentaries. This week, I received an invitation to become a Sky VIP based on loyalty viewing of a platform, and I really wouldn't be surprised if we don't start to see this trickling down to an individual show level. Going really, really micro, of course, your streaming user experience design needs some form of highlighter to tell you which box or panel you've selected with your remote. But who's going to be the first person to innovate with how that is manifested at the moment? Because right now, they all look the same. Perhaps it will be some clever use of Z-depth, perhaps. Again, there's some interesting work being done in mobiles that hasn't really translated yet into the user experience of streaming services. While we're looking at UX innovations, here's a little edit of some of the favorite work that I've seen recently that could be influencing Envor design back into our linear world as well, not just in streaming. mean, it doesn't take much for me to get excited. Seeing the back of a guitar shows how far that we can still come in terms of our design to really innovate. Finally, on micro interactions, could we get a more interesting personal take on the algorithm? Spideo, showing here, is a really interesting iOS app. And this uses mood or battle system, where it'll evolve your content recommendation by constantly asking you to choose between two bits of content, The Shining or 16 Candles is this extraordinary iteration. But presumably, it could be asking me if I wanted to watch a raunchy European TV program or a witty workplace. Now, while it's great to influence viewing, there is still a role for the lean-back experience of viewing. So our sixth Learning for Online TV brands from the world of linear is very, very, very old school. It's about viewing habits. There is that much maligned thing that all of us over the age of 18 understand, which is when we used to come home and slump on the sofa, the joy of channel surfing. Remember that, idly flicking through 57 channels and settling on something. Now, interesting for me, the YouTube TV app for live content is slick and intuitive, allowing the user to quickly channel surf between programs. I just think it's interesting to see a new entrant borrowing from that very timeless feeling of the surfer. But more than that, I'm going to boldly predict something, which is that very soon streamers will start launching linear channels to serve as a window on their content. Sounds crazy at first. It was something we've been talking about at Red Bee. How do you otherwise get that serendipity moment of being surprised and enticed by something you've otherwise never heard of? It sounded crazy, and then I read that Netflix were doing just that, albeit initially on a radio. A Barker channel for their comedy content. Here's a trailer for it.
And that's just science.
You want to do this?
I'm so grateful for that decision.
It doesn't technically make sense, but it sounded fancy.
It's a pretty important day.
It was really only a matter of time.
There's gonna be horses and cocaine and Cher's gonna show up.
Wow, that's a really good idea.
I'll call the police. Not the authorities, but the band.
See, I'll think I'm bullshit. Check my Instagram, all right?
Now, to me, it's not a very big step to imagine Netflix launching a comedy TV channel as a showcase for all of the content that they're gradually building up on their streaming service. After all, if you think of all the big traditional TV players entering the OTT world, like Fox, Warner, NBCU, they already have windows onto their offer in the form of multiple TV channels. Enabling, for example, the BBC, where I come from, to do this.
Stay exactly where you are, don't move. Are you up for it?
Let's go for a drive.
Hallelujah!
Let's go!
We need the risks.
No, I didn't. If they did, they wouldn't do it.
Extraordinary.
Every episode, available now on BBC iPlayer.
So increasingly we're seeing whole box sets being dropped initially on iPlayer, and then the linear channel effectively being used as a marketing tool to promote it. Here's another example from ABC in Australia.
Get out of the car!
No way.
Binge new dramas from start to finish this June on iView.
So much for what online TV can learn from our deep history in TV marketing. Now I'd like to turn to what branding innovations we could all be taking from the wider digital world to help, you know, protect our status from what one senior network executive casually described to me as the great cable cull that's coming. The first of these is what we call gateway design. And this is based on the principle that everyone here who works on a traditional broadcast brand should be making all branding and navigation decisions based on a streaming future. So, what are the symbols, the navigational styles, frankly, even the names that you should be applying to your portfolios now in order to prepare your viewers for a seamless transition? A project we've been working on with Discovery outside of the USA is their streaming platform, Dplay. We've been working with them on the brand architecture of channels that need establishing or naming or renaming and how they ladder up to the navigation system on Dplay, their streaming service. And even a very small change to their logo attempts to move them from being a catch-up player with the visual semiotics of being a player to being considered alongside Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. Obviously within their sector rather than the entertainment sector. But crucially, the logo also doesn't stay static. It plays the role of a responsive, active guide with its own movement and audio mnemonic. And as part of the design system, we've also developed a signature brand expression based on an enthusiastic finger swipe motion, which helps to give Dplay what we've said is crying out for in this world, more of a personality. An enthusiastic brand personality as it scurries off screen and brings content back to the audience in a set of categories that Discovery have called passion verticals. Now, the new identity system for Dplay is only in the Nordic region at the moment, which is a test bed for a lot of the OTT services. And it's only been live for a couple of months, and there's a lot more to come. But to give you a little flavor of how it works on and off air, on Dplay itself, here's a little bit of a case study.
How blue, how beautiful.
Hopefully you'll see some of the thinking from the first half of this presentation throughout. Curator sub-brands that help with identification, brand bonds, micro-interactions, even carousel design. Now, whilst you start to reframe the role of your network or cable brand as a gateway to a streaming future, it's also acceptable to stress your competitive advantage as a network or cable brand. One which is the simple fact that you are alive and broadcasting minute by minute, in step with your audience, in a way that an on-demand brand can never be. So my question is, are linear brands making that aliveness count enough? Making it count in how you integrate sponsors, making it count in how you weave in social, making it count by using time-specific commentary, making it count by staging stunts in real time. Here's a couple of interesting examples. Firstly, returning to the UK channel Dave I mentioned right back at the top. They were creating a sponsorship with Snickers. And as you know, Snickers' advertising position is, you're not you when you're hungry. Now, Snickers had analysis of the moment in the day when people are at their snackiest, probably personality-altering hungriest. It's 3:28 in the afternoon. I'm sure there would be some nods of agreement in the room. So, Dave took that insight and their ability to be live, to be in tune with their audience's body clocks in a truly memorable way.
Watched by millions daily, the Dave TV channel is famous for its funny, high-energy, action-packed programs. But what happened when Dave got hungry? Dave became
Rupert, a pontificating, polo-playing, slipper-wearing square.
At exactly 3:28, the hungriest time of the day, the entirely new channel Rupert changed the schedule and started showing nonsense like a pretentious art film.
Infâme. Le temps. L'amour.
A stuffy show appraising art and antiques.
Welcome to Private Collections.
Today we're in the home of Charles Philip, and we'll be looking at his collection of 15th century Renaissance art.
He even broadcast the International Chess Championships.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You join us here at the International Chess Championships, where the Russian Vladimir Kramnik is preparing to take on China's Ding Li Ren.
At the exact same time, Dave's social channels were also taken over by Rupert, creating even more out-of-character content. He also took over the advertising. And even the receptionist.
Hello, Rupert, how may I help you?
With viewers as confused as the channel, Snickers stepped in and sorted out the broadcasting slip-up.
Li Ren reaches for a point.
Please excuse that slip-up, viewers. Get a bit confused when hungry. Just ate a Snickers, so everything is now A-OK. Your regular broadcast is about to begin.
With the ordeal over, Dave sent out a big soz to all its viewers, promising to never let Rupert return.
This out-of-character behaviour was a crime against television. You, our loyal viewers, deserve better. So to ensure this never happens again, Dave has stocked up with enough Snickers to sink a battleship.
Snickers, you're not you when you're hungry.
Now, with two teenage sons, I spend a lot of time inadvertently looking at Fortnite and examining its captivating hold on a generation. And I think one of the trump cards that Fortnite have pulled off, compared to most other games, is that there were within it these random moments of surprise and delight that, again, only happen live at a specific moment in time, not in a future, oh, I might stream it in a month, right now. Like when they staged a live concert in the middle of the game with superstar DJ Marshmello. Now, I mean, a concert in a video game, how big a deal could that be? Well, 10.7 million people watched the concert live. And here, watching on a gaming YouTuber's channel, listen to his delight as the beat drops and Epic Games, the makers of Fortnite, suddenly turned on zero gravity. I mean, I can only take so much of it, but that is stuff that you can only do when you're live and in the moment. So I just think for all broadcasts and cable channels, we could be asking ourselves, what is our surprise and delight zero-G moment? Because it could happen within marketing, not just within programming. The third element that all linear channels should be accommodating are what I call shareable segments. This is, I guess, what we'd have probably previously called promo entertainment or promotainment, but I think it's worth reframing it with a more specific task in mind. If we look at what Instagram describe as their best practice for brands who are appearing on their platform, Instagram, they talk about bringing communities together, talk to them and respond, highlight real people behind the business, put fun and playful in front of polished, talk about where you are and where you're going. And I looked at that and I thought, that's not a bad roadmap for our own channel's real estate, creating content that exists both on and off air that is inherently shareable. A great recent example of this comes from the BBC, where they took a comedy series about a group of stoner community radio DJs and got them to provide live commentary on David Attenborough's Blue Planet 2. It ran on BBC Three and here in Facebook. Another live surprise and delight moment.
What's
Raw.
That?
Nah.
Raw. What's that? Who's that? That's a crab. Here's a fun fact for you. Some people in this world eat crabs.
No, seriously.
You break your teeth. Oh, it's jumping.
Oh, wow.
Jumping it's a jumping crab.
Yeah.
They must be evolved.
Well, yeah, evolution is a dangerous tool.
Mad that they can climb, though, isn't
it? If they had all them legs and couldn't climb, then yeah, I wouldn't respect them. They wouldn't even command my respect.
I'd be more comfortable fighting a crab.
Very true, because you could just step on a crab, whereas if you step on a snake, you'd slip over. Yeah. The sea snake is the banana peel of the sea.
Oh, and now this gig's is coming out as well.
Oh, no, he's coming out of the woodwork.
Oh, that is disgusting. Looks like something I cough up in the morning.
I can't deal with this. You understand?
It runs on water.
I know.
Miracle of nature. Oh, he's got him.
Oh, wow. Oh,
that's it. Game over, mate. You got caught slipping. Man got caught slipping, mate.
Have him up, bruv.
What?
Yes, bruv.
Yeah, he sparked him in his face. Okay. Yes.
Maybe he really is the Jesus of the sea.
Trust me. You punch
it. It was over for me.
You get punched in the face by a crab, you know about it.
Really brave work. Here's another lovely example from last year of shareable social content at its heart. Sky's Valentine's campaign.
Being in love is great, but saying it can be difficult. That's why for Valentine's Day, TV channel Sky suggested on social media to all wannabe lovers, say it with Sky, with a website that transforms your Valentine's message into film snippets from Sky.
Sometimes we all need to look into our hearts.
I love you.
And I want to have babies with you.
Shall we shag now or shall we shag later?
How did we make that happen? We developed an AI semantic tool. It extracted from 845 romantic movies on Sky all the dialogue. The tool then matched the dialogue with the entered texts. It even made suggestions for more creative messages. And finally, edited a personal Valentine's Day clip in the end.
You are so beautiful.
You're an exquisite creature.
And I think...
you're my prince.
Well, here's to us.
So you could send this to your sweetheart.
You're so pretty.
So inherently shareable, and I think as with the BBC example before, going back to that Instagram advice, fun and playful over polished. Finally, I think looking at how we innovate with advertiser integration is a really exciting area that we're just scratching the surface of in linear broadcasting. I love studying the growth of podcasts. Part of the explanation for the growing commercial success of podcasts is the host read, where a show's presenter also voices the advertising. Now, I know the other success of podcast advertising is partly to do with how you're consuming the media, and if you're running or cooking or commuting, you usually can't be asked to skip forward 30 seconds to avoid an ad. But I actually think it's most successful when the host has taken and applied his own brand voice to make them even more entertaining in their own right. It makes them much less likely to be skipped and much more likely to be shared. My current UK favourite comedy podcaster, who's a friend of Promax and appeared at several conferences, is a guy called Adam Buxton, whose mashup songs and YouTube video commentaries has made him an internet legend. Just to give you a bit of a flavour of what he does, here he is providing fake sing-along lyrics to the theme tune of dark Scandinavian drama, The Bridge.
Echo start as it crosses the room. Trembling noises that come too soon. Special moon which seems to hear. Resonating a mask of fear. Hollow talk in a hollow game. Thoughts set off on the road of pain.
Anyway, you get the gist. Listening to Adam's pod, every ad is done entirely in his own style. So rather than a generic Squarespace ad, you'll get his take. In fact, obviously, in Adam's very meta style, his own take on what a host-read podcast ad sounds like. Here's a snippet.
Hey, how are you doing, listeners?
Hello.
Let me tell you about this week's ramble, which is, as you may have realized, with British actor, writer, comedian, press regulation advocate, sometime cocaine enthusiast and channeler of one of the greatest comedy characters of all time, Steve Coogan. See what you think. It was a fun convo. Here we go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Generic Podcast, episode 7529, with me, Todd Oddvoice. Today, we're dedicating the whole 4.5 hours to the best way to build your own website. Once again, we have Nancy here. Hey, Nancy.
Hello.
Can you just get a bit closer on the mic there, Nancy?
Is this better?
That's perfect. Okay, so Nancy, how would you go about building a website? It looks complicated, is it?
No, not at all. I would recommend visiting squarespace.com/Buxton.
Buxton.
Where you can undertake a free trial using templates and easy-to-use tools to build a very professional-looking site in a matter of minutes.
Oh,
and when you're happy and ready to launch, use the offer code
Buxton
to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Nancy, that sounds awesome. Let's talk about it for a really long time. What's the address again?
You go to squarespace.com/Buxton. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code Buxton to save 10%.
I mean, it just doesn't sound like an ad to me. That's the thing. And I do think there's something that we can still learn from that. What does that mean in broadcasting? I think it's about producing more contextually relevant advertising. I think there's been an increase in this over the years, but we can still put the audience even further ahead in our thinking when we're planning media junctions. Interestingly, going back to the beginning in UI and UX, they're starting to talk about anticipatory design, making smart choices that anticipate what the viewer wants next. I mean, maybe in our world that was all along just smart media planning. Here's a moment when the BBC went out of an episode of police procedural crime drama Line of Duty into a campaign we had made for the BBC's funding mechanism, the TV licensing. I've had to record this off the TV, so apologies for the low fine quality.
Agreed. Great. P.S. Cafferty, D.C., the person who recruited you.
Cliff, don't do this. That document's the only proof we have.
No, we don't need this. I changed the TV license. Everyone's going paperless now.
Oh, okay. Great. Sorry about that.
Managing your TV license needn't be a drama. Go paperless at tvlicensing.co.uk.
So just a simple bit of media planning that recognised that this was a series in which people mostly looked at each other through the windows of offices in mildly suspicious fashion and placed an ad that did exactly that. Finally, looking at junction and break structure as a whole, it strikes me that despite my kind of cry for change 4 years ago, things are pretty much ambled on in the same way. We're making the same pop-ups, the same menus, moving at about the speed of 2003. And the competition communicates in a way that moves at the speed of 2019. Let's look at the end of a video from brilliant YouTuber Lisa Koshy, 4.3 million Insta followers. I've done a little in-video tally of the number of messages that she is landing in a 20, 25 second clip. And she lands all of these without me as a viewer feeling like I'm confused. That's an exciting challenge for all of us because I think it's about 18 or 19 in 20 seconds.
All right, now I'm picking Alex up from the basketball court. Oh, he's half naked. Please give this video a thumbs up. Hey!
Uber?
Get in.
Ah!
All right, ready?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay. Woo! No. Sorry, I was in reverse.
No.
What?
Gabby was right.
Oh, Alex! So that's all I have for you guys today. I hope you guys enjoyed this video. If you did, please give it a big thumbs up because I almost died multiple times. Also, please make sure to subscribe. Please check out my other social medias and the passengers in this vehicle. Description below. And let me know in the comments below if you want to see another driving with Liza. And let me know what you want to see. I'll see you guys next Wednesday with Liza. This little brown girl is out. I'm still in my car, but it's cool. I'm out. Bye.
Back posture? Well, your back is as straight as a rainbow. You look like you should be in a bell tower, you little hunchback.
So, 18 messages in 20 seconds. Maybe we're all a little bit too staid at the moment. So here's to an incredibly exciting future for streamers and linear broadcasters alike. We can learn from each other, we can grow with each other. We just have to keep breaking those established patterns of behavior and sometimes need to look outside what we're doing on a daily basis. Thanks very much. I'd love to chat more over the next few days. If you want to track me down, this is me, this is us. Thank you. Enjoy the conference.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, produced this podcast. Video helper provides the music. Digital content producer Kayla Marie Hardaway contributes to Daily Brief. Promax is rebranded to just Promax, so you can find us on Promax Global on Facebook and Promax _ Global on Twitter and Instagram. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.